distributor has paid sales tax on the order of $4,400. Okay. The retailer buys the product from the distributor. That's inventory. It's not subject to sales tax. But the fixtures, the furnishings, the fuel, the electricity, the cash register, and so on that the retailer has to buy, that's subject to sales tax. Okay, so we've got this $342,875 total cost there, plus the labor, rent, interest, not subject to sales tax, profits not subject to sales tax. So the total sales amount by the retailer to the householder is the sum of those inventory costs, fixtures cost, labor, rent, and profit, or $924,925. Selling it to a household, so add the 5.5% sales tax, and you get the grand total paid by final purchasers. The sales tax collected by the retailer is $50,871. The sales tax paid by the retailer on certain of its purchasers is $17,875. So what's the sales tax that the state receives on this in this supply chain? Well, it's equal to the sales tax that was collected when the appliance manufacturer was making certain purchases. It's the sales tax paid by the distributor when the distributor made certain purchases, plus the sales tax paid by the retailer when the retailer made certain purchases, plus the sales tax paid by the household when the final good was purchased. So the total amount of all that is $74,796. Okay? If you calculate that amount as a percentage of the list price, it's 8.09%. Okay? If you calculate it on the value of the product net of all sales taxes, it's 8.31%. So the point is, when you bring extra reality into the pyramiding example, you find that the effective tax rate is considerably larger than the statutory tax rate. The tax paid at the early stages of the supply chain get embedded in operating costs, which get embedded in prices, which end up getting embedded in the price and the tax that's ultimately paid by the household. So, the tax on business-to-business purchases adds to state revenue, and it adds to the price and the tax paid by the household. Now, you've got an exhibit 3. The Nebraska line shows that Nebraska's numbers are about the state sales tax, and it also depends on the structure of the state economy. If a state has a relatively minor manufacturing sector, then regardless of what it does with its sales tax, it's going to have a somewhat lower share. And if a state has a big, for instance, tourist share, like Hawaii, it's going to have a lower business share, not because of the structure of the tax, but because of the state economy. Nevertheless, this table gives you an idea of the extent to which state sales taxes are including a significant chunk of business purchases in the tax base, and of course that means they're subject to the pyramiding model. So what's wrong with pyramiding? In the first instance, it violates the idea that we have a general tax on consumption spending. The retail sales tax becomes, instead of a pure consumption tax, it becomes a hybrid somewhere between a turnover tax and a consumption tax. So that's one of the problems. Second problem is one of transparency. A lot of the tax burden is hidden. The consumer doesn't really know how much retail sales tax is included in the purchase when the purchase is being made. In the exhibit 2 example, the person buying something from this retailer is going to think that the retail sales tax that he or she is paying is 5.5%, because that's what gets added to the cash register. Not so. The tax that's being paid is over 8%. So what's the problem with that? Well, I guess on the one hand, you could say you're lying. And on the other hand, you may be contributing to inflated government. 5.5 is cheaper than 8, and maybe that gives an incentive for people to be less cautious about watching government expansion. You're camouflaging your taxation with pyramiding. You also have a disincentive for business expansion. You're adding sales tax liability to business investment. You're adding sales tax liability to business purchases. And that creates a disincentive for improving manufacturing, for investing in more productive devices, and for expanding your operations. And I'm not sure that that's the kind of thing that most states really would like to do. It reduces competitiveness. You're adding an extra cost to your products. You're adding an extra cost to what your businesses are doing. And if there are jurisdictions that don't face this extra cost, then you face a competitive disadvantage. The problem is particularly severe in international competition, because most governments around the world that use general consumption taxes use a form of taxation that removes business purchases almost completely from their sales tax. So your businesses have got sales tax embedded in the prices that they're charging. They're facing international competitors who do not have sales taxes embedded in the things that they're tax paid by business isn't particularly well related to economic capacity or to the use of government services. So there's a fundamental logical problem with having that tax levy. It just doesn't fit the basic logic of taxation. It distorts business behavior. It artificially encourages outsourcing, discourages outsourcing, discourages new business formation. It gives an artificial advantage to a vertically integrated business. If you think about my second example, I had the appliance manufacturer, a distributor, and a retailer. Okay, what happens if the retailer takes over the role of the distributor? You've got a set of exchanges, a set of pyramiding possibilities taken out of the supply chain. That makes the vertically integrated business have an extra competitive advantage over firms that are not so integrated. In some jurisdictions, this is an extra advantage to Walmart because it eliminates that distributor stage of the process. It's just fine if vertical integration makes economic sense, but you probably don't want your tax system to artificially encourage it. It creates prospective horizontal inequity. The tax rate, the effective tax rate on a particular purchase will vary depending on what the supply chain looks like. If it has a supply chain with lots of transactions in the process, you're going to have a higher effective tax rate than if you don't have that because of the pyramiding problem. And finally, your tax law certainly says that certain purchasers are tax exempt, like certain nonprofit organizations, like certain kinds of governments. Your tax law may say that certain kinds of goods or services are tax exempt, like currently food for at-home consumption. Well, they're not. They're not without tax because they are bearing the embedded tax from the tax that's being applied to business purchases. So those are the basic problems that we have with pyramiding. You get rid of these problems by business purchase exemptions as broadly as possible. Now, why do business purchases remain in the tax base? Okay, four reasons, I think. One, there's tax revenue. We estimate that about 20% of all state and local tax paid by businesses comes from the sales tax that's being paid by those businesses. We need to add up income tax, property tax, and so on, along with sales tax, and the sales tax that they're paying amounts to about 20% of that total. Second reason, some politicians like to hide taxes. I don't know about you, but some do. Applying the tax to business purchases is a nice way of hiding tax burden from households. Some lawmakers like to behave like Soviet planners. They like to be able to dole out selective tax benefits. So I'm going to say we're going to tax this whole array of business purchases except for purchases for research and development, or certain other production of motion pictures, or whatever kind of favorite business activity it is. They identify not subsidies to businesses. They're just simply properly defining the tax as a tax on household consumption. All right, second thing I want to talk about. Second issue I refer to as the disappearing sales tax base. The issue here is that the sales tax base is in secular decline. And I've got five graphs. Five graphs are exhibits 4 through 8 in the handout that I've given you. First of all, the disappearing sales tax base is a national phenomenon. I have here graphs over the 1970 through 2011 period of the dotted line is the median breadth of the sales tax for all state sales taxes in the United States. I added up, not sales tax revenue, but the sales tax base for each state, divided that by personal income of the state, calculated the median for each one of these years, and you can see the dotted line goes down. The sales tax is narrowing year after year after year in a very, very consistent way. The solid line is a thing, that, another measure that we refer to as C efficiency. That's a national aggregate number that's based on coverage of total consumption spending in the economy. And it too is declining. I can't do the consumption calculation on a state-by-state basis because those data don't exist. Okay, disappearing base. Nebraska's base. I've done the calculation here for the state of Nebraska, and you did things in the early part of the 1980s. I don't know. I'm sure that people who work specifically on Nebraska tax issues can say, we did certain kinds of sales tax restructuring about that time. I don't know what they were. I think you took food out of the business about that time. That would have been part of it. You certainly did some other things. But forget about that anomaly back in those early years. Just work from 1990 onward. And you can see, well, there have been a few blips along the way. You can see that your sales tax base has been disappearing as well. The trend is downward. I've taken the changing tax rates out of the picture, and I'm looking just at the implicit tax base for the sales tax. And I've divided that by personal income, the size of the economy, and you can see that disappearance going on. Now, again, I'm going to bounce back to national numbers here. One of the things that might be causing the sales tax base to disappear is if people were saving a lot more. Okay? If they were saving a lot more of their income as opposed to spending their income. And although that's a possibility, that's almost certainly not the case. The blue line on the exhibit, the one on top, that's total consumption as a share of personal income in the United States. And you can see that total consumption hasn't been going down as a share of income. People haven't been saving more. In fact, the share of income consumed is somewhat higher at the end of the period than at the beginning of the period. And that says, well, you know, the sales tax base ought to be increasing, except it isn't. The red line. Notice that it's increased. It's risen fairly substantially from around 0.4 to 5.5 or so by 2011. This is the services spending on services as a percent of personal income. In the American economy, more and more, a greater and greater share of personal income is being spent on services as opposed to being spent on goods. And of course, you immediately know that there's a problem in that. Services tend to be excluded from retail sales tax bases. Certainly, they're not generally covered in sales tax bases. Now, you can't immediately jump to say, well, the thing to do is we have to apply the sales tax to services. Because people start getting a little antsy because healthcare is a big factor in that service spending. Here's healthcare service spending as a share of personal income over that 1970 to 2011 period. And you can see that that share has just skyrocketed. It's better than that. So a significant piece of that increase of spending on untaxed services is increased spending on untaxed healthcare services. Now, I think the fundamental logic says, well, it's part of consumption spending, and so maybe we ought to include it in the base. But people get worried with that sort of a position. So I show you this chart just to alert you to the fact that looking at the expanding share of services and saying, well, tax services, that'll fix the decline base, that may not be a lever that you want to immediately make. However, if you look at the share of other services, it still is increasing as well. Let me tell you what services I got here. I've got total services in the U.S. economy, but I've excluded healthcare. I've excluded spending on restaurants and lodging. You have to exclude that because that's already taxed, right? As people go to restaurants as opposed to eating at home, they're falling into the sales tax base if you've exempted grocery store food. So you have to take out restaurant food spending and lodging from the services sector because that's already in your sales tax base. The nature of the way national income accounting counts consumption spending, well, it includes expenditures by nonprofit organizations. So I subtracted that spending from this total as well. And it also includes foreign travel. And that's not going to be something that is it going to ever be in your sales tax base. I mean, if I spend money in a beer hall in Germany, it's never going to be in your sales tax base. So I got to take that out too. The rest of the stuff is what I've got here. This is services that are, I think, potentially taxable. Oh, I've also So, but these are services that logically could be in a state retail sales tax as a percent of personal income. And you can see that they've risen over time. And by expanding your tax base into those kinds of services, you can reduce the problem of the disappearing base. So it's an option. So why tax service businesses? Well, first of all, we've got yield to avoid higher statutory tax rates by including the services generally in the tax base. And I say generally, not specifically, because you get all sorts of issues with being selected. We improve horizontal equity. Households with higher taste for services under the current system end up paying lower effective tax rates than households that don't spend as much money on services. By taxing services, you avoid what I refer to as silly distinctions. Silly distinctions, like the distinction between having your taxes done by H&R Block and not being subject to the sales tax versus buying TurboTax at your local store and having to pay the sales tax. Or deciding to improve your golf game. If you get golf lessons from the pro, you're not going to be subject to the sales tax. If you buy a book to read and to improve your game, you're going to have that purchase subject to sales tax. Plus, you have a problem in many instances of separate invoicing of parts and labor on motor vehicle repairs, not because of any fundamental logic, but because of differential sales tax. Distinction between getting a home burglar alarm system or buying a Glock for home protection. One subject to sales tax, the other not. You may also improve the vertical equity tax. It may reduce them aggressively somewhat, although it's not a sure thing. But there is a caveat in all of this. You need a distinction between business purchases and household purchases of services. If you just say, we're going to tax services, you're going to end up taxing business purchases of services, which leads to pyramid problems, which lead to some really great discrimination, particularly against small businesses. Because lots of small businesses are service providers, lawyers and accountants and so on. And those are activities that a larger business can quite easily bring in-house and avoid tax liability. So if you do extend the base to cover services, you've got to continue the distinction between not taxing services that are business inputs while taxing services that are household consumption. There are horror stories about that. Okay, so I'll summarize. Retail sales tax works as an indirect consumption expenditure tax. Doesn't work as an income tax. It works as a consumption tax. And there's very strong logical arguments for the use of tax on consumption. You want to do something other than tax general consumption, you ought to levy another tax. You ought to increase your income tax if you want to tax income. If you want to, tax wealth, fiddle around with your property tax. But if you want to tax consumption, the retail sales tax is the American possibility. For retail sales taxes to succeed as a uniform consumption tax, with the equity and efficiency effects of that kind of a tax, then you need to exempt all business purchases. And you need to tax all household consumption purchases. And that includes food purchased for at-home consumption. I know that you've talked about this in the past. I mean, I heard you at lunch today. And I know some of the history. But taxing food for at-home consumption is a logical part of a general consumption tax. If you exempt food for at-home consumption, you are in the funny situation of giving about 43% of the tax relief to households whose incomes are over $75,000. That's not particularly good targeting for relief. Doesn't make much sense. And similarly, taxing motor fuels, purchase of motor fuels by households, or a significant